Can you imagine what it would be like to be blind or partially sighted 100 years ago? Seeing Our History is an RNIB Scotland project funded by the Heritage Lottery Fund that explores this question in Edinburgh, the Lothians and the Borders. Our volunteers have researched the lives of those referred to as the outdoor blind because they didn't live in blind institutions. In this series of podcasts, you can experience their struggles and successes brought to life through the real experiences of people with sight loss. Here's Lizzie Ellicott to tell us about education and raised type.
Education was seen as a gateway to a fulfilled and productive life. In Edinburgh, a school for blind children was first opened in the 1830s. The school joined with a blind asylum in 1876 and moved from Gayfield Square to Craig Miller. The missions to the outdoor blind served adults. Some had been blind from birth or childhood, while others had lost their sight during adulthood or old age. The missionaries taught outdoor blind people to read raised type using the moon system. The moon system consisted of simplified embossed letters. The letters were read by touch, and the reader's fingers travelled from left to right and then return from right to left as they move backwards and forwards along the lines and down the page. The aim of the missionaries, by teaching blind people to read, was to give them access to the Bible. Religious texts in the moon system could be read at the society's reading room. The society also had a lending service, and the large books were delivered to the readers' homes. This was particularly useful to people who lived in the countryside beyond Edinburgh. But educators had a wider aim, especially in teaching children. That was to teach skills that would help them to earn a living as adults and to survive in sighted society. They were taught the three R's, craft skills and music. Religion was, of course, not neglected. Ian Hutchinson is a research historian for the Seeing Our History project. Ian, did the missionaries not teach Braille?
The missionaries were highly dedicated to the moon system. When they set out in 1857, moon was widely used while Braille was in its infancy. The missions to outdoor blind did not begin to include Braille until the 1890s, by which time it was well established in the Edinburgh Blind School.
It sounds as if they were rather prejudiced against Braille.
Well, it's a bit like moving from, for example, videos to DVDs. Your whole system has to be changed. The Society's libraries were filled with volumes in moon, so when they eventually offered Braille too, they had to stock two types of books.
But what did blind people want?
The missionaries found that Braille was popular with young people, not least because they could write Braille as well as read it. The older people found the dots difficult to read and preferred the system that they were familiar with, which was moon.
The blind school taught other skills. Did these set them up for life as adults?
Many blind school children ultimately depended on the blind asylum for work. Mostly this was craft work, such as basket making, weaving, making mattresses and so on. If they were dismissed from the asylum workshops, they often struggled to survive.
That's Ian Hutchinson, the research historian for the Seeing Our History project. Bella Wood is a case of dismissal from her position at the blind asylum. Bella was sacked from the blind asylum where she taught music in the school. For most blind workers, this would have been disastrous, but Bella was a survivor. She was born in Aberdeen in 1868. Her father, John Wood, was a pattern maker in the city. Her mother was Wilhelmina. Bella was blind from infancy. Soon after her birth, the family moved to Pennycook in Mid Lothian. John worked there as a millwright in the paper mills. Bella entered the new blind school at Craig Miller in Edinburgh. Bella appears to have been a good pupil because, upon completion of her education, she was kept on as a music teacher. However, when she was 21, after around 7 years as a teacher, she was dismissed for disobedience to the orders of the headmaster and lady superintendent. Later, she asked for a letter of reference. The directors decided to give her a certificate of attainment only, but not character. Bella, now home with her family in Pennycook, wrote a letter of appreciation. From home, she continued working as a music teacher. This started in 1891, by which time she had 6 brothers and sisters, aged from 2 to 16. She was still working from home 20 years later, living with her widowed father and 2 of her younger sisters. Later she worked as a braille copyist, and by her 60s she was living in Musselburgh by the sea. In 1936, she applied for a place in the Thomas Burns Home for Blind Women and was accepted. She was 67 years old and was to live there for nearly 3 decades. She had a long life, a third of which was spent in the home. It concluded with the stark words in the asylum report. Death, Miss Isabella Wood, on 4 December 1964, aged 95, reported. Bella Wood died in the Royal Asylum, Thomas Burns Home, for elderly blind women. This is the abrupt manner in which the end of a long life was recorded. Veronica Bell is a research volunteer who looks into the life of Isabella Wood. Veronica, how important was the influence on the blind school on Bella's life?
Bella was lucky in that Edinburgh had a school dedicated to educating blind children. Her home city, Aberdeen, did not have a blind school. It may be that Bella's family moved to Pennycook for this reason, so as to be close to the blind school. This would have been a big decision for the family. Bella thrived at the school. She developed a passion for music, and her musical talent sustained her for much of her life. The school was clearly important in developing this particular skill.
Why was Bella later dismissed from the school?
Why Bella was dismissed is unclear. The asylum records only say that she had been guilty of disobedience to the orders of the headmaster and the lady superintendent. This disobedience resulted in Bella being reported to the school's directors, who then expelled her. It would, of course, be unusual for them to undermine the headmaster's authority by overruling his decision. The directors did not like insubordination, and Bella obviously challenged the system. It was not uncommon for people employed at the institution to take issue with rules. Bella was obviously not afraid to challenge authority, and she would have known the risks. Interestingly, the directors gave Bella 3 months' salary in lieu of notice. Maybe they felt an element of guilt over their decision.
How did this affect Bella's life?
Bella seems not to have let her sacking hold her back, and she even thanked the board for the reference that they grudgingly gave her. The reference nonetheless endorsed Bella as a competent music teacher. Bella continued to teach from home for many years. She later worked as a Braille copywriter for the Society of the Outdoor Blind, a skilled and important job. Bella seems to have thrived as an independent woman. However, as a Braille copywriter in the Society's reading rooms, she would no doubt have enjoyed the companionship of working with others.
Did Bella remain close to her family?
Bella moved to Musselburgh in her 60s, but we know nothing of her life there. When she was 67, she applied to enter the Thomas Burns Home for Blind Women and was accepted. She remained at the home until her death at the grand age of 95. How much contact her family had with her there, we do not know. She possibly outlived all close family members. Her death was not registered by a relative, but by an employee at the Thomas Burns home. The brief and abrupt reporting of her death in the asylum's records seems sadly dismissive of the long life of a woman who had both skill and character.
That was Veronica Bell, a research volunteer on the Seeing Our History project.
This podcast is part of a project by RNIB Scotland, supported by the Heritage Lottery Fund, which explores the experiences of outdoor blind people living in Edinburgh, the Borders and the Lothians 100 years ago. For more information about the Seeing Our History project, please go to insightradio.co.uk/seeingourhistory.
She was taken in by a basket weaver and his kin, got a job in a restaurant bar where she met Livingston. But then he was called up by HM Naval in Orkney. A destroyer smashed their boat, and the rest is history. Come on in, come on in, welcome to our Buckingham. We'll squeeze you in, squeeze you in. How'd you like your tea? Come on down, come on down. You can help fix our abode.